Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, it's a hard life picking stones and pulling teats, but sure as God's got sandals, it beats fighting dudes with treasure trails.
Roll Tide. Welcome you to Porch Talk. This is your host, Alan, and this is the final day. It's a Monday. We had Porch Fest over the weekend. My good friend Johnny Havard, he came up from Mobile, Alabama. What's good, dude?
Man. Porch Fest 2021.
Yeah.
Had so much fun. I'm so glad you invited me out. And
was on the bill.
Yeah, was on the bill. And, you know, you hit me up and you're like, hey, man, I'm doing Porch Fest at the house. If you're not doing anything that weekend, I'd love for you to come up and do stand-up. And I was like, all right, cool, I'm in. And you were like, all right, and I've got you on the poster. I'm like, okay, all right.
So. It is it's set in stone now.
Set in stone, so which is
yeah,
good.
Yeah, man. So it's the second time. Like this is like a Shona festival. Like the first time, it was just Stiff Tones, Tim Higgins, and myself.
Right.
And not as much planning went in. This was like a whole month of chaos, and like today is like the biggest breath of fresh air for me.
Oh yeah, I mean, still the turnout that you did have, the amount of talent that did show up and performed, regardless of you know, you got these guys that just want to play.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't played shows in a while. They're extremely talented, and like you said, like in within the area of one percenters, they're like in the meaning that they're just like these hidden gems that just haven't flourished yet. You know, as far as a lot of people saying. But I mean, they're coming from Columbus, Starkville, Memphis,
Tupelo, Philadelphia.
I mean, I drove from Mobile, but I mean, you know, I was mostly coming up here just to hang out with you because every time you come to Mobile, you just slum it with me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was great. I needed to take some time off from the hospital and, you know, come up and I wanted to just hang out with you and just have a good time, which I did. And I got to do stand up too. So
went over well.
Yeah, I think so. I feel better about, you know, my material and having that confidence that I need to get on stage and everything. Because I haven't done it. This is the first time I've done stand-up in over a year.
I mean, for a lot of people, like, you take some of the singer-songwriters or even the band.
Mm-hmm.
That was Canned Rabbit. That was the first time they ever played a show.
Really?
Canned Rabbit is Ryan Munson, but, like, yeah. Everyone else in the band, that just kind of just happened.
Oh, okay.
And so that was unique. And,
yeah. Well, he got up and did his solo stuff, you know, and then the rest of the band got out. But, I mean, the way they played, I would have thought they've been playing shows for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were just such a tight, you know.
So, like, the rest of Canned Rabbit, so you had Lance Cooper, John Wright, and Justin Kleber.
Mm-hmm.
They were... The Right Moves. That was Columbus, Mississippi's band.
Mm.
And they had been doing The Right Moves for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever I thought Columbus, Mississippi, and this was going on while I was in Mobile, but when I thought of Columbus, those are the guys I thought of when it came to representing Columbus, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of see they're real tight. They know what they're doing.
Right, right.
And they've been doing it together for a long time. And then... Daniel Sharp, he and I, we played at Neshoba County Fair.
Mm-hmm.
That's down in Philadelphia, Mississippi.
Yeah.
That was the first time I actually missed his set. But I believe that was the last time that he had played, and that was back during the summer. And
yeah.
For Mitch Presley or Moon Pie, I'm not sure. you know, this might have been the first time.
That was another thing. I heard you talk about him before. I mean, even before you told me about the event and who was all playing, but when you mentioned Daniel Sloss and Moon Pie, you know, and you were telling me some of the best songwriters that you've heard, and me actually getting to sit there and listen to them, you know, and I was like, yeah, these guys, you know, and plus they know each other and they've been writing music and playing music together for a long time.
We're in this group chat now.
Yeah, yeah.
The singer-songwriter group, we call it. Daniel calls us the Desperados. But him and Moon Pie met in Oxford years ago.
Yeah.
I believe Moon Pie at that time, I think he was bussing. He was just playing
bussing tables?
Playing out on the streets.
Street bussing. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, and Mitch Presley, God, that was good.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, it's extremely talented and, very, what do you call it? Very humble, seems though. But I mean, like, the amount of talent that guy has is phenomenal.
Yeah, not to mention that last name and him not even carrying it as a banner. But could you imagine?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And I mean, in, you know, the theory that I have on that too is like he wants to be recognized for his music, not for, you know, the legacy that his family holds. You know, because he wants to get noticed by his music, not just because of who he is and where where his family leans, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's what I take from that. And I mean, he seems like very extremely humble, and I mean, a damn good musician too. I was listening to him, and then when I walked outside, and I heard him playing "The Girl from North Country,"
mm-hmm.
and you know, and for any of you that don't know, it's a song. Made popular by Bob Dylan, and then later on, Dylan and Johnny Cash, they recorded a version of it together. And that's how I found out about it, because I'm a huge fan of both of them. And I learned, and I was telling him, and I told you, I learned how to play that song not too long ago. That's one of my favorite Bob Dylan, Johnny Cash collab songs. And I heard him playing that, and I was like, okay, all right, let's go.
Respect on that name.
Yeah, and I mean, but it's... But his original stuff, and just after that, you know, I was able to witness all of it. I mean, the guy's great, man. He's got a bright future ahead of him, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I had my favorite record label out of Alabama, Cornelius Chapel, was represented by Sarah Lee Langford. She opened everything up.
Yes, she was fantastic. I'm glad I got the pleasure of listening to her and talking to her before she got on stage too. I saw that she had a Martin, I had my Martin with me, and she asked me, she said, are you going to play today? And I said, no, I'm a comedian. And she goes, oh, that's interesting. But we had a great conversation, super sweet and an extremely talented songwriter.
Yeah, and then my boy out of Groove Johnson, Philip Sable, shut mm-hmm. down the evening.
Man, when you told me he's probably the best guitar player, you know, around. And, you know, I didn't know him from Adam, you know, mm-hmm. and we hit it off. You introduced us because he was the first one to get here. You know, he's a sound guy and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we talking, and I was like, all right, man, this guy's pretty cool. And then, you know, he did the whole, you know, helping with doing the sound and setting everything up. And then he was just hanging out, and we were, you know, shooting the shit. And he's a really cool guy. And then... And then when he finally started playing, I didn't expect it. I didn't expect, you know, he tambourine foot, and you know, he had the pedal set up on the loop, and he was sliding, and yeah, I mean, he got after it, dude. I mean, he acted like he, you know, playing in front of thousands of people. He even broke a string in the middle of a song, broke a string, just kept on going.
Break stride.
And then when he finished the song, he ripped that thing off, and like a NASCAR pit crew member, he put a brand new one on there in no time. And I was like, this dude, you know, and he acted like it wasn't nothing. But extremely talented guy. Everybody that was here did not disappoint me at all.
And then Sunday, it was our only act. It was Night Surf.
Night Surf.
That's my favorite punk band in the area.
Man, they, those guys, that was great. I really look forward to seeing. I want to see more of everybody, but those guys too. That was a good finisher because they made the holler back there, literally holler.
Yeah.
I mean, they got after it for a 3-man punk band. Man, they killed it.
Yeah, this is they're out of Starkville. Yeah. And so they've been on the show. The only people I haven't had on the show that was on the set was Midge and Moonpie. Everyone else has been on the show. And so that's something I'll have to track them back down to get. But
yeah, definitely. Moonpie too. He when Daniel said that, you know, you won't meet somebody that can turn a phrase like he can, as far as, you know, lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he did extreme. He's, you know, brilliant. The way he just put it, lyrics and verses together, just the way he writes them out and then he performs it is just fantastic. And what really got me too is his harmonica playing too. Because that's another thing that I haven't seen a whole lot of is, you know, I got hooked on it, you know, like I said, being a Bob Dylan fan. And I play harmonica too while playing guitar. And, I mean, he just killed it.
Yeah. You know what this whole weekend made me want to do is, like, just disappear for about a month or two with my guitar and harmonica and just...
Yeah, yeah.
Come back transformed.
It really did. It really did motivate me to go back and get into it because I've been slacking on it on myself. I've been too focused on writing my comedy and doing that.
And having you and Big John do comedy, and that was one thing that we had a food truck come out. And so just within this podcast is I'm all about the arts,
mm-hmm.
and I'm all about small business.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an artist paint what was going on the stage. And
yes.
When he ran out of canvas, I was like, no sweat, bub. Gave him some of them Natty Light boxes. Paint on this. I think he sold everything.
I think he did. But yeah, when I remember I'm standing out there, and I was like watching, and it was awesome too for me because you know I draw and I do art too, you know, occasionally, and I like watching people
mm-hmm.
draw, you know. Or paint or whatever.
Yeah, I wanted him to get up on stage with the artists and like, yeah, so people could see both going on at once. But
he got from where what he was painting, like to get the, you know, his, I guess, his mind's eye or his vision for what mm-hmm. he was about to put on the canvas. I mean, he was standing out there within the crowd, but it was what I was going to say was it was great because I got to stand behind him. It was big enough, we were in the backyard, it was big enough to where I could stand behind him, watch him paint, and watch the band, and listen to him at the same time.
Yeah.
So it was just, and watching him just look, and just do his thing, and just back and forth. But then, but when he ran out of the canvases, and I see you walking out, and you got natty boxes, I was like, what is Alan doing? And then he looked at me and he said, I gotta give him a canvas. And I was like, what? And then he did. He said, man, he painted the mess out of him. And he did, and it looks awesome.
Yeah.
It did. It did, you know, I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I think I was thankful for the turnout.
Definitely.
When the food truck got here.
Who was awesome, by the way.
And everybody supported.
Absolutely.
Everybody got one bite to eat.
He did. It and it was good. Food. It was good food. He was a really cool guy. Got to talk to him. Mm-hmm. He was really nice, you know, and... you know, passionate about what he does, and you know,
that's Bully's Lounge. He likes doing these kind of events. Any listener out there in the area would like to have a food truck at your event.
Yeah, where is he locally?
Caledonia.
Okay.
Yes, which is outside of Columbus.
Okay.
And that was the main reason I snagged him up.
Mm-hmm.
So I work in Starkville, and I eat food trucks twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked the two in Starkville if they could, and they were already booked up for the weekend. And
then right.
I went over to, he was here. You remember meeting Blake Dillard?
Yeah, yeah.
He stayed in the house for the most part. And that was another thing. That was just, there was so much nostalgia because, you know, I was, especially when the event was wide open, as I was running around like a chicken with my head cut off.
Oh, yeah.
Just making sure everybody was accommodated. And
yeah.
And then I walk into the house and I just see just all these old faces from back in high school, and it was the way it used to be.
Right.
And I was like, my God, I just stepped in a time capsule back in 2009.
Yeah, you told me, and then I got to, you know, you introduced me to all of them, because that's all, like you said, that's your everybody you, partied with and hung out with back in high school and all, and, and they embraced me, and I got to hang out with them and everything. It was really cool.
Good group of folks.
Yeah, it was very, it hit me back to, you know, back and same thing with me when I was growing up, the, you know, select group that I had that we'd hang out and get into stuff with, so... Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, yeah, you had a lot on your plate, coordinating everything, and not only that, you know, you're doing it at your house too. So, you know, trying to organize an event, and then you know, you got all that going on, man. But you killed it, dude. Like I said, I'm super proud of you for what you've done and what you put together.
I want to do it again.
Dude, keep doing it. Like I told you, do it. Do it every time the weather changes. Do it.
I'm totally down for that.
Well, speaking of the weather too, it starts getting cold, like really cold. You know, it's going to be hard. I mean, it got cold Saturday night.
It did.
It dropped down.
And I think Moon Pie was a little upset when we moved him in at first, but then he just embraced it.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he's
you know, and I don't blame him. It's like he went from you know, plugged in, singing out of a mic.
Yeah. Had and a little then, space heater blowing
yeah,
on it.
And then I looked out in the yard, and everybody just looked cold, and my thought was, I can accommodate everyone inside.
Yeah, buddy, they were bundled up, too. It did. It dropped down to hell. It had to have been in the 50s, probably less.
Yeah.
It got cold. But, I mean, like you said, he got in, and he started playing, and he realized the people who were there were paying attention to him. Now, we weren't just chilling in the house. We were going to pay attention. We wanted to listen to see what he had to offer. And then him and Philip and... you know, which I don't think Philip needed the warmth anyway, as much as that dude was moving around and getting after it, because by the end of his set, he was sweating.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, but still, like you said, mostly for the audience, too. Everybody was hanging out there. And then we had a pot of coffee going on and got everybody warmed up.
That was the smartest thing I did all night. I just looked out in the yard and everybody was like shivering and bundling up, and I was like, I'm just going to start making coffee.
Yeah, get coffee made and say, hey, everybody, look, y'all come on inside. Y'all don't need shiver.
I got some warm coffee. Come in and warm up.
Come on. But, you know, it would be, I just thought about this. If you had like a burn pit or something.
I wanted to do a couch burning.
Oh, yeah.
And so Monson, Canned Rabbit, he had just gotten back from, I think, up in like West Virginia.
Okay.
And there is this festival, it's called Couch Fest. And what this guy does all year within his community is like, they just, when they get a new couch, they give him the old couch.
Mm-hmm.
And so he'll throw a music festival together, and there'll be a bonfire of nothing but couches.
I was like,
anyway, I mean, we used to do couch burnings here, and I was like, well,
you told me that before, and then I got to meet your brother finally, and then I remember him, y'all were talking about that, reminiscing about couch burning, and then Sid mentioned it, so I was like, man, you boys went hard.
We did. That's another thing about, I guess, that nostalgia is like, we're all still alive.
Yeah, yeah.
And because, man, I may have been the roughest one out of the group.
Yeah.
As far as hard control and...
Well, fiery redheaded.
Yeah. That's it. Well, dude, it's been a year since you had done comedy. Set went over well.
It did. And going back to, like, we were talking about it, and to give everybody a perspective, after it got cold and we moved everybody in, Moon Pie did his thing, and then Philip did his thing, and then that's when we opened up with doing stand-up. So I wasn't expecting doing stand-up without a microphone in somebody's kitchen, but, I just embraced it. I had a great time. You know, it was a real relaxed environment, even though I didn't know most of the people there, but I was there long enough to kind of meet everybody and, you know, but they didn't know what my comedy was.
Yeah, and I remember we were having a conversation like a little bit, maybe a week before you came up, and he was like, you know, this is some of the stuff I'm going to do. Is that going to piss people off? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do I need to hold back? Nope.
No. No, because, like, a coworker told me, he said, if you're questioning what you're doing, just do it. And, you know, part of me was like, well, you know, if you think it's a bad idea, just don't do it. But you gotta steer away from that, because the point that I try to make too, and a lot of comics try to do, and you shouldn't really, comics shouldn't have to explain themselves. Nobody should really have to explain themselves.
Or have to play it safe.
Or play, you know, they or any artist, you know, just don't, you don't have to, you know, think, just think about it or try to explain yourself. I mean, you just do it. Just do your comedy. Do your art. And if, and especially with comedy, if people, you know, understand it's jokes. And that's a thin line as jokes, telling a joke and just straight up being a douchebag.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a line that you got to do. But I mean, and everything that I point across, I'm not doing it. I'll make fun of myself first before I do anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most of my material is talking about the possible inbreeding in my family, and that's probably why I have three nipples. But, you know, but just, you know, go out there and just, you gotta, you know, nothing's off the table.
Right.
Things can be talked about, and you can make jokes about it, but that doesn't make you a bad person.
Right, and just everything going on in the arts, and the one art that, I really do not want to come under fire, because I believe comedy, it needs the most freedom over,
mm-hmm.
over music, or whether it's just visual art,
mm-hmm.
or even spoken word with poetry, is it goes back to the court gesture.
Mm-hmm.
Of back when there was an issue with the king, and like the court gesture would come in and like he would make light of what was going on, and then like he would be the only person that communicate that to the king without getting his head chopped off.
Right.
And so we need to be able to talk about these cultural things. Mm-hmm. And even if you're just, yeah, I believe it should start internally with yourself, and then maybe work its way out to a more what's going on within the culture today. But
yep.
If it stirs up an emotion in you to mm-hmm. where maybe you get your feathers a little ruffled, I think as an audience member, that should lead to
self-reflection.
Self-reflection and personal evaluation.
And kind of go back and be, all right, so why am I upset about this?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have to deal with myself all the time. And go back and, you know, like if I get upset about something somebody did, or, you know, especially, you know, where I came from, or, you know, me, you know, why do people act the way that they do, you know, and I have to reflect on, you know, all right, well, why am I upset about this, and evaluate that and be like, okay, well, they, A, B, C, D,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then just, and then I go back and I'm like, why am I so worried about what somebody else is doing? You know, I need, you know, focus on me. Focus on what I'm doing. And but when you're writing comedy, you know, me personally, and this is why we have so many different genres. You know, there's a lot of different comics that focus on particular subjects or have a particular style that they, you know, some like Tom Segura, just mostly he's had a special called Mostly Stories, because that's what he's known for, is just his style is just mostly him telling stories.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to Bill Hicks, who talked about, you know, how we're all one, and how and he does touch on politics, but just like how us as a human, he calls human society, he called us a virus with shoes. That's what he called the human race. And so it just depends. It just depends on what kind of comedy that you want to, you know, what kind of style that you want to do. But it's still, but comics, too, when you talk about subjects like that, the thing, especially the things that people don't want to talk about,
mm-hmm.
you know, it does stir up conversation, and it does make people think. It's not particularly to make them think, for the audience to think the same way that you do, so, but just to kind of get the audience familiar about where you're coming from,
mm-hmm.
whether they agree with it or not, but just kind of understand more about you, but understand also, you know, they're making light of it. It's not anything to hurt or hate towards anybody. So, but, yeah, I love it. I absolutely do love it. Like I said, it was been over a year since I've performed. And after my last gig, I kind of was thinking about washing my hands of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't help it. I that's all I think about. I love doing it. So and it really did. I felt this out of all, this is the third time I've done it, so I don't mean to sit here and talk like I'm a veteran comedian or anything. I'm not. I'm far from it. But this was the most fun I had doing it. I felt more relaxed. I was extremely confident in everything. And I mean, it was the environment, it was the setting, but it was just, I made myself relaxed. So, and then all the encouragement, of course, that you and everybody else have given me.
Right on. And I mean, just with doing this is, Porch Talk covered a music festival not too long ago. And, you know, we've covered several in the past, and I'm not knocking or anything, but in Cobb wanted me to call it Super Spreader 21. He's still making
COVID. That sounds like an adult film.
Yeah, he's still making COVID jokes, but but I mean, there's something to it. One of the last festivals that I covered, it was an inside venue, and masks were not required, but they were encouraged. And I just remember like looking around at people. And I was like, this is not the vibe. This is not the energy for a music festival. It's like this is something to be excited about, to be glad that you're here, to be having this shared experience. And I was like, if we can capture that perfectly in my backyard or in my kitchen,
oh, yeah,
let's do it. And I think we nailed it.
Yeah, well, hell yes. Absolutely.
And I don't think there was any anxiety on anyone. I didn't, like... Everybody was shaking hands, hugging, and
yeah,
it was just a big communion.
Yeah, I mean, there was people that did not like some of my jokes.
Yeah,
you know, and they laughed at my other ones though. So you know, but that's the thing. Some people, they have their things, you know, that they don't like, won't made fun of, which is completely understandable. I get that. And but the best part about it is, even I talked to somebody who did not like one of my jokes, and we talked about it. But we had a civil conversation about it. You know, it wasn't, you know, you don't need to talk about that. It wasn't that. It was just, yeah, I'm not a big fan of that. But I mean, he said, dude, regardless of what I think, you got on stage and you did your thing and you was extremely confident and everything was funny. Everything else that I didn't like was funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and that's, you don't see a lot of that too. But I think it's because we were in that setting, like you said, of, it's not only that you coordinated a show, but it's like, friends, like everybody here, we're fellowshipping.
Yeah.
You know, everybody here was supporting each other.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no anxiety, no animosity, no jealousy. Just people, artists getting together and fans of the art getting together and having a great time.
And that was like, you know, the month of planning and going into this is, you know, people ask me, is so Porch Fest, what's it all about? And I was like, it's all about the arts.
Yeah.
We're going to have a small truck, vendor out the food.
Mm-hmm.
And the three things that I'm going to promise you is that you're going to have a great time. You're going to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be memorable.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think I nailed all three.
Yeah, you did. And I mean, hey, and I mean, just, and that just means the next time you do it, you got to keep getting better and better.
Yeah, I hope so. I want to keep pushing. And like, there were a lot of people who came to the first event that I did, and they came back. Mm-hmm. So they already knew what to expect. They knew what was up.
Right.
So, and this was dope.
Yeah, it was.
Let's, Johnny's been on the show in the past, and we talk about the world of comics. There is a lot going on in the world of comics right now. Marvel is pushing out the new... they got the Eternals. They also are opening up
tomorrow.
The multiverse is opening wide open in the movie. I think Loki, the TV show, was the one that really. Oh, here it comes!
From what I've gathered, he's going through time periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm you know, and I've said before, I'm behind on Marvel stuff, yeah, as far as the movies and the cinematic universe is coming out. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on that, and a lot of it, I'm behind on, but they're kicking out, Marvel's kicking out their phase 4. So, and I think the Eternals is what's kicking it all off. And then of course the new Spider-Man movie coming out, which is, you know, that's going to be a big thing.
A lot of folks are excited about Ock coming back on the screen. Yeah,
and again, that's going through with the whole, you know, opening for him. I think that'd be part of, like, the Spider-Verse, as they call it, and like all these different realities of different Spider-Men. So in the, but you know, in this, the way they're doing it now with this is like the cinematic one. So, mm-hmm. you know, the cinematic movie. So the Tobey Maguire coming back and the Andrew Garfield coming back and their villains coming back. And I'll tell you the truth. I'm excited about Doc Ock too. Cause Spider-Man 2, the Sam Raimi Spider-Man 2. I think that's a fan favorite of considered one of the best comic book movies, which I agree with that. And I'm not a huge Spider-Man fan at all, but I grew up with those movies.
Mm-hmm.
But seeing Doc Ock come back, but my big thing that I'm super excited about, because he's one of my favorite actors, is Willem Dafoe coming back as Green Goblin. So, because that man just killed it in the first movie, in my opinion. I mm-hmm. think he did a fantastic job how he did that. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that. But with me personally, you know I'm a DC guy.
Right.
So when DC Fandom announced, which is they haven't been doing Comic-Con, but it's this now web show or live web show that they do. It's basically, you know, like Comic-Con, they show the trailers and they have people talk about the films and the projects that are coming out and everything, not only with the films, but within the comics and the new stories that are coming out. When that kicked off and we got to see the new trailer for Matt Reeves, the Batman, blew my mind away.
Yeah, and
really, really did.
Our new Batman is more than a glittering vampire.
Yes, he gets. I've said it before. Every actor that has ever played Batman, there has been some stigma attached to him. Even all the way back to Michael Keaton. You know, and that was before the internet, when people found out that he was going to be Batman, people were throwing a fit, and they were like, Mr. Mom, and you know, and he wound up doing a great job.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the thing about Pattinson, though, man, I'm guilty of it, too, and then later, when I started seeing his other work.
That's what I tell people all yeah. the time, is like, dude, his other films and works is phenomenal. It's more than that mm-hmm. one Goblet of Fire with Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And it's more than the Twilight series. Yeah. He's done a lot of great work.
Oh, he's done fantastic. And I mean, he's a professional as far as actors go.
And within the trailer is like one thing. I mean, Batman is my favorite superhero.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that we've never really seen on film, well done, especially with like the latest ones. If you want to talk about Christian Bale, Batman is like, what is Batman? He's the great detective.
Yeah.
And yeah. so this is like opening up and like the Riddler and like actually seeing detective work.
Right.
And not relying so much on Lucius Fox and
mm-hmm.
like.
They, and I've said it before too, the thing about Batman, and this is my biggest gripe with the Christopher Nolan films, I just felt like, you know, Batman, when his very first appearance in the comics was Detective Comics, which is now, you know, later the company turned into DC,
mm-hmm.
but that was the title, and it's still an ongoing title. It was Detective Comics number 27, released in 1939. That's when he came out. And at the time then, it was crime noir, trying to solve cases and all. But that's the thing about Batman. His nickname is the world's greatest detective. Ra's al Ghul calls him Detective. Or Ra's al Ghul, however you want to pronounce it. He doesn't call him Bruce. He doesn't call him Batman. He says Detective. And that was my other biggest gripe about the Nolan movies, you know. But the way they set those up with Ra's al Ghul and that was, you know, he was trained him and everything.
And they really did take the fantasy out of Batman.
In those movies, yeah. I mean, Ra's al Ghul was an immortal, and, you know, Bane was just this huge guy with a breathing problem. And, from what we... And he... Now, that being said, he did some little bit of detective work, but he took the bullet out of the wall and then he studied it for some reason, what caliber or whatever, I don't know why, and then gave it to Lucius Fox, and then, oh, there's the thumbprint.
Hmm.
I'm like, okay. But in the Michael Keaton movies, the first one with the Joker, Jack Nicholson's Joker, he figured out the formula of the Joker toxin, the combination of cosmetics, like the hairspray and the deodorant and everything that was causing people to get the Joker poisoning and dying. They don't see him actually, you don't see him actually working on it, but he figured it out. And he tells Vicki Vale, he says, give this to the police. Mm-hmm. She's like, you figured it out. He said, I figured it out. And now that being said, in the comic book version of the movie, because they did release a comic of it, it shows Bruce figuring it out. So, and that's what I'm really hoping for with the Pattinson movie. We could see more of that. Cause Matt Reeves did say it's going to be a detective noir. He's been, Batman for about 2 years. So he's still, you know, figuring everything out. And who better than to test his detective ability or get him into thinking, you know, understanding I need to solve crimes this way is the Riddler.
Mm-hmm.
The villain that that fights Batman with intellect instead of brawn.
Mm-hmm.
So and he also did, Matt Reeves did say it's gonna be kind of like a combination of Batman Year One and Batman the Long Halloween, which is a fantastic graphic novel, which is very noir, and I'm picking up major vibes from that. So, yeah, really look. And then, of course, what still blows my mind away is Colin Farrell as the Penguin.
Yeah.
The makeup that they did on that is just, like, holy crap. Like, he doesn't need, and I think this is going to be a way for him, Colin Farrell, to really... To show his acting chops, really. He hasn't, I don't think he's really, he's had a shot, I guess you'd say, as far as really getting to let loose. So, I'm super excited for it.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, even with, like, DC, you know, you had Birds of Prey, Suicide Squad, mm-hmm. Batman v Superman. We got the Snyder Cut now, which is totally...
Of Justice League, yeah.
It's totally worth...
The 4 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I haven't given up on DC. They got off to a little bit of a rough start.
Well, again, with the DC fandom, the big thing for me, obviously, was the Batman trailer. But, speaking of Michael Keaton Batman, the new Flash movie that's coming out, they already announced it. Michael Keaton's coming back as Batman, because Barry is going to... it's going to be roughly, the movie's going to be roughly based off of Flashpoint Paradox, which was the comic that kicked off, the end of it kicked off the New 52 universe back in 2012. And so Barry's going to be going through the multiverse, or he goes back in time or something to that effect, and they released a sneak of a clip of the trailer or scenes, and you know, Michael Keaton's narrating a little bit, and then we get to see hints at him and everything, and it was great. I'm excited to see where that's going to go. And I think this is going to be a way for them to kind of reset the DC universe in a way. So, because they've already hinted at the fact in the Flash TV show on the CW about, you know, Barry in the multiverse and the Speed Force and everything. And then they did the Crisis on Infinite Earths, which is a big story that happens in DC, which is always DC's way of rebooting everything, mm-hmm. in a way. And they did it in the TV show. And even in the TV show, the movie Flash, Ezra Miller's Flash, meets Grant Gustin's TV Flash. They show up, and he's like, you're me? He's like, yeah, I'm you. And he's like, whoa, this is weird.
Mm-hmm.
So they're hinting at that, to where they're using the multiverse as a way to connect everybody. As opposed to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, everything that's kicked off since Iron Man 1 in 2008 is all part of the same cinematic universe. So the TV shows, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the Netflix shows, the movies are all connected within the same universe.
Yeah.
And just DC didn't start off like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just going back to Marvel for a second, and like, you had the cure for it, which is... And I've been critical of these superhero films. I've been critical of some of the TV shows coming out that, you know, if it's more fantasy or whatever else, is like, well, that just really wasn't worth my time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't like complaining about something unless there's a solution. It's one thing to complain about a problem, but if you don't have an answer to it,
mm-hmm.
you just hot air, man.
Yeah.
And so, like, with Brie Larson's Captain Marvel, and, like, this was about the time I cut it off, it was toward the beginning of the film, was the guy made the snide comment toward her. He was on the motorcycle, and in the following scene, you see her on that motorcycle. And I was like, that is not a hero. Mm. That is not anti-hero. That is villainous and evil. Mm. I mean, even the behavior of Captain Marvel in that moment was, that was not a good look.
Yeah. See, I didn't watch it. But the way everybody was setting up the movie, or what I've gathered from the plot, is like, there's basically the plot, the Green Lantern.
Yeah.
You know, an Air Force pilot meets the alien force, gains powers, becomes part of a patrol, intergalactic patrol across the galaxy. That's Green Lantern.
Yeah.
So, but I, you know, again, like I said, it's the Marvel movies to me, if it's about particular characters, I'll watch them. Or when I got Disney Plus, I try to go back and watch everything. I started all the way and watched them in release date, not chronological timeline date. And, you know, and I mean, I still enjoy them. I mean, I do. I like some of them. I like Doctor Strange. I thought that was great. Great film. I thought it was fun. Captain America Winter Soldier is awesome.
Yeah.
And you know me, I've told you, the only characters, Marvel characters, that I've really paid attention to is X-Men and Daredevil. And then we were talking about Captain Marvel, and now that Disney has bought Fox, they have the cinematic rights back to the X-Men characters. So I'm interested to see on how they're going to incorporate that. Which, apparently, within the WandaVision show, there was a Easter egg that did hint at, I think it was Excalibur, which is a hint towards, the X-Men. Because, you know, Quicksilver and, Scarlet Witch are Magneto's as kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, but the way they got around that was, when they were released, Quicksilver and Wanda, Scarlet Witch, their first appearance in the comic books was the Avengers. So that's how they got around using them in the film, but they couldn't call them mutants or make any, or they couldn't call them Magneto's as kids.
Uh-huh.
Because Magneto, mutants, all that was
still
tied to Fox. So they made them metahumans. So I'm interested in see how they're going to incorporate that, within the lore of it now. How are they going to introduce mutants to an established cinematic universe that, you know,
is cohesive to the whole...
Right. So, but I do, like we were talking about Captain Marvel, though, what I'd like to see, and I think this will settle a lot of people, because there are a lot of people that don't like Brie Larson at all, as not even an actress, but also as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Me personally, I don't know why. I've just heard things, but I mean, I don't know her personally, and I've barely seen her act, so I don't really have a dog in the fight.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have a theory, which I think would be, and plus I think it'd be really cool. It'd be a way to open up the X-Men into it. Is all right, do another Captain Marvel movie, and then at the end of it, she gets her powers taken away from Rogue, like she did in the comics.
There you go.
And then I think that'd be, and it could be like a post-credit scene or something.
Yeah.
And then just like Rogue takes her powers, and then we're introduced to Rogue and Mystique, because during that time, I think Rogue was running around with Mystique. And I think that'd be great. I'm just really curious to see how they're going to pull that off.
Yeah.
And who the cast will be. And I know a lot of people are saying, you can't replace Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. I'm like, I think you can. He's the first actor to pull it off,
mm-hmm.
you know? And my big thing is, I mean, how are you going to replace Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen as Xavier and Magneto? I know we got James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender, and they did great.
Mm-hmm. But the younger versions.
Yeah. And I get that we can use them for further in the future, but Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, though, like the way them two played those roles.
Yeah.
And, like, the whole friendship that they do have that, you know, that is established, we see that in those movies. Now, that later on with the James McAvoy and the Michael Fassbender's movies, they dipped into that a lot with the relationship, but Magneto and Mystique played the good guys, quote-unquote good guys, way too much. in those movies, my opinion, especially Mystique, because they kind of redid her. They really did redid her character a lot, because they had Jennifer Lawrence, and Jennifer Lawrence was like, if I'm playing this character, I'm going to, you know, it's going to be a big role. I'm going to have more depth to the character, which I get that to an extent, but I would have done a lot of things differently. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah. And just like, man, like, you know, your favorite pastime probably is reading comics. Is mine is I read fantasies. And so Lord of the Rings, Wheel of Time, which has a TV show coming out.
Yeah, we saw the trailer for that. I was like, that looks good. And you're like, that's my third favorite fantasy novel.
Mm-hmm. And right now, I mean, I'm rereading the Kingkiller Chronicles. I've been waiting for the third and final of the trilogy within that to come out for, oh my God, years now. Yeah. And
did you ever get into Game of Thrones?
No.
After I got HBO Max, and again, like I said, the only reason why I got it, because I wanted to watch the Snyder Cut. That's the only reason why I got it, and then I realized how much is on HBO Max. Yeah. HBO Max is awesome. Yeah. I'll be the first one to tell you. I think it's great. I finally sat down and watched it, because I never did, because I never had HBO too recently. And plus, I worked at a comic book store, and of course, after every new episode, that's what everybody at the shop talked about.
Oh, yeah.
And then the same thing with The Walking Dead and everything else. It all got spoiled for me, or that's what everybody talked about. So I was like, I'm just going to wait till
it's over.
It's over, and then watch it and binge watch it. And I did. So, but you were talking about when you were telling me that you were getting into fantasy or writing fantasy, and you were talking about how hard it is to
be original.
Be original, because Tolkien.
Yeah,
kind of locked it down on that.
He really did, and like some of the other fantasy books that I've read over the, you know, the past 10 years is like rip off.
Yeah,
and like with the Kingkiller Chronicles, that's my favorite. But Patrick Rothfuss of book one, he opened up a lot of loose ends. In book two, all he did was offer even more loose ends, and now I think he's to a point to where he doesn't know how to tie everything in a nice little bow and
finish or maybe he's doing that just to one, to continue the series, and two, to get the reader to be like, okay, well, what about what happened there? All right, it's been 10 years.
It's been 10 years.
Yeah, and he's still kicking out.
He'll hop on his YouTube channel and be like, it's coming. Be like, you've been saying that for 10 years, man.
Yeah. And people are still buying the books, aren't they?
They are.
Yeah, so it could be his master plan.
Could be, but it seems to me that I think someone else is going to pick up the mantle and finish the book. It's what it seems like, because it was rumored that he didn't even write the second one, that it was ghostwritten by another. And I can't remember that cat's name yet.
But, interesting.
But yeah, I'm working through, like, doing a whole world builder like Tolkien of fresh characters. There's going to be some sense of magic. It's not going to be like wizards. It's not going to be... I'm trying to stay away from like Harry Potter with wands, or even Gandalf with a staff. One thing about the Kingkiller Chronicles, it was a very fresh view of magic. It was like the first book is called The Name of the Wind. And like the way that they use magic in that world is if you knew the name of something, you could wield it. And The Name of the Wind, like, it's one of the most emotional scenes in the book toward the beginning of it, is when he was learning from a master that knew all the names of these different elementals and how to use them. He told the main character, Kalf, he's like, you never want to call him the Name of the Wind, or you could displace the oxygen and choke yourself. And that happens.
Wow.
And he almost dies.
Wow.
And so, like, and that's to let you know just how crazy these you have to be a master of.
Yeah, spoken word.
Yeah. And so it was a very interesting take on like magic, because that had never been done. And like, you know, if you you got Tolkien did elves and dwarves and dragons and
Uruk-hai
and orcs, and you had elephants and these people who would break them and use them for war, and then you had the pirates, and you had wizards, and then he didn't stop. He developed languages and maps and
that they
history
spoke and used in the film.
Yeah, and I was like, a lot of development, It was his last work, you know. And before that, he had The Hobbit, and so like his last work was Middle Earth. And him and C.S. Lewis became friends. He was actually J.R. Tolkien. He was Catholic. Mm-hmm. And he converted C.S. Lewis to Christianity mm-hmm. and to becoming a Christian.
And the character of the aunt that helps Merry and Pippin, Treebeard,
uh-huh.
is based off of C.S. Lewis.
Yeah.
And when they were doing the film, they were trying to find the right voice. The voice was supposedly supposed to match C.S. Lewis.
Oh, wow.
So they actually used the same actor that played Gimli do the voice
of Treebeard. Cool.
So I learned that, and you know, I got the Lord of the Rings extended edition. So mm-hmm. you know, and I got in that, and I got all like the packs with like six DVDs in it.
Oh, I got it right down there too.
Yeah, and I got so I watched all that, being the nerd that I am, and then I saw when they were talking about they were doing like the animatronics where they were talking about the character of Treebeard,
mm-hmm.
and they gave the history about the connection between Tolkien and C.S. Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
It was really interesting.
It was very contrast because, like, C.S. Lewis's work, he did a lot of I've got a lot of his books where he wrote about Christianity. Like, a lot of people are familiar with Mere Christianity. Like, mm-hmm. That is a book that you would give to someone who has questions about faith, and C.S. does a great job of just laying out Christianity merely, like a face value. These are the tenets. And he goes in greater detail with books like The Problem of Pain, The Great Divorce,
uh-huh.
and stuff like that. But he also had his Chronicles of Narnia.
Right.
He also, and nobody's really heard of these, but he also had Escape from the Silent Planets. And so, like, he had two different fantasies where Tolkien spent his whole life on Middle Earth,
yeah.
while Lewis was very broad
yeah.
with his works.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the impact that those two had on each other. It was just...
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that I'm trying to create here within Porch Talk. And, like, you know, you were telling me that, hey, I'm getting ready to start a Twitch and I want to do gaming. And I was like, yeah, dude, if I had the internet here, I would totally do that. Like, that would be something, because I want to create culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I want to write. That's why I'm writing a fantasy. That's why I have a podcast. That's why of songwriting, of everything that I'm trying to do is, like, and I want to be more inclusive and get more people involved and, like, under the umbrella. And then, like, under this umbrella is, like, okay, here's Johnny, and he's Twitch gamer for Porch Talk or whatever you would like to call it if you want to come under the umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, once a week, every 2 weeks, once a month, we get together over a Zoom call or over a Twitch and just do a catch-up and, like, bring rein in the universe.
Right, right.
And just as the idea expands, and, like, I mean, that was Porch Fest. It's like, man, we had music, we had comedy, we had art. And so it was, mm-hmm. like, everything that Porch Talk respects and pushes was right there.
Right, yeah. And that was, like, when I was telling people back home, or I was telling coworkers what I was doing, what I got invited to do, and I was putting out and was telling everybody about your show and what you were doing, and... they said, so what is it? Is it like a concert? I said, well, it's kind of a concert, but it's a festival. So it's an arts festival.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be art, the arts. So it's going to be songwriting, original music, poetry, art. I had a guy out here painting.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Big John doing stand up. That's an art form. So it was. I told everybody it's an arts festival. That's how I've been explaining it, because that's what it is.
Right.
It's not just we're gonna have some bands play and yee roll tide.
Right.
It was wherever. It was a way for everybody to experience all these different art forms.
Because
mm-hmm. there's probably some people that have never really paid attention to stand up. There's, you know, and there was probably people that never watched somebody
paint.
Paint just go out and was able to paint. You know, just while they're doing their set, was able to do a full canvas painting.
And it's interesting, like you said, to be able to stand behind someone and, like, that's their mind's eye and what they see.
Yeah.
And they're like, you're looking at it too.
Right.
But it's, you might not be seeing the same
thing. I'd love to watch Abe Partridge paint.
Or even like Robbie Amonette.
Yeah.
Remember when we went to see the Abe and Red Clay Stray shows, and
yeah.
they had him up on stage,
yeah.
and he was painting?
He was. I mean, he was getting after it.
I had never, like, Robbie Amonette was, Andre, the guy who painted here, was the first live painter that I ever saw that did live events. And then I met Robbie, and then I was like, oh, this is a thing. Because it happens here, it happens there, it must happen everywhere.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I want that to happen in my show.
Yeah, absolutely. And those guys seem like they love doing it. They come out, they do it, and they do their work.
And then just the improv jazz of my crazy ass is, oh, you're out of canvas? I'll be right back.
Yeah. Thank you, Natural Light. Hey, Natural Light, how about you send us had a sponsorship.
Yeah.
We probably bought...
God,
we took advantage of those 15-pack natties.
Yeah, I would estimate probably 8 were bought.
Yeah, you probably, yeah. I know there's a full one left in the refrigerator.
Yeah. And I don't even want to smell a beer for about a week.
Shoot, I do. That's what I do. After I'm about to, you know, I leave from here, I got that 4-hour drive back to Mobile. I get out of the car, I know I'm going to need one.
Well, Johnny, anything else to add or subtract?
Just keep on keeping on, dude.
You too.
Man, I loved it. Thanks again for having me and coming out, man. It was great. I can't wait to do this again. And then you come down to Mobile. You know, I always got a couch for you. You slum it with me again, man.
Yeah, man. Thinking around the holidays, I'll be back down there.
Hell yeah.
Well, hey, homie. We out of here.
All right. Thanks, y'all.
News and Nodes, thank you so much for listening to Porch Talk. If you haven't done so already, I would ask that you would rate and review the show on whatever podcast app it is that you listen to on. Share it with your friends. Talk to a coworker about it. Put it on your social media. Everything we do here is grassroots. It's all word of mouth, and it's all thanks to you. We're going to walk this on out the door now with Night Surf. This is Choose How to Lose.
driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.